This is episode 34 with Amy Fletcher and John Hagel. Welcome back to the Future Intelligent Leadership Podcast. If you're interested in innovative wisdom and practical tools for leading in a complex, uncertain, and exponentially changing world, then this podcast is for you. Aloha, and welcome back to the Future Intelligent Leadership Podcast. This is your host, Tyler Mongan, co-founder of Haku Global. We're an organization dedicated to accelerating leadership future intelligence and scaling future readiness across organizations for an emerging tech future. You can find out more about our facilitations and trainings at www.haku.global. Today's co-guests are John Hagel and Amy Fletcher. John is the founder of Beyond Our Edge. He is a widely published and quoted thought leader and keynote speaker featured at the World Economic Forum, Microsoft CEO Summit, Harvard Business School, TED, and Singularity University. His goal is to help leaders engage around fundamental issues, find more effective ways of integrating personal development, and drive the evolution of their environments to achieve their full potential. He works with companies from all over the world to widen the field of vision, to anticipate opportunities that can be leveraged, build excitement, and cultivate emotions that will help people achieve more impact and more meaning. Amy is a visiting professor of political science at Eastern Kentucky University. Her work focuses on public policy and foresight for emerging technologies, with areas of expertise including future studies, foresight, biopolitics, space policy, and smart cities. She's highly skilled in public policy analysis, public speaking, workshop facilitation, and foresight analysis and scenario building. In this episode, we discuss how fear limits foresight, why leaders need to balance the ability to zoom out and zoom in, how to create the pause and space for foresight, the power of being vulnerable enough to ask questions and not just provide answers, why organizations of the future will scale learning instead of efficiency, and why the current climate of exponential change creates exponential opportunities. Let's listen. So aloha, Amy and John. Thank you both for joining me on this episode of the Future Intelligent Leadership Podcast. And as always, I want to start with this key question of how can leadership be more intelligent or smart about the future, given this environment of complexity, uncertainty, and exponential change in the world? And I'd love for you both to answer this from your perspective of your work. I'd like to start with John.
Sure. I think my core advice to leaders is to avoid the temptation to fall into fear or reactivity, and instead focus on inspiring people with an opportunity and cultivate a desire to learn. I think most leaders in the current environment, they have a tendency to either try to drive change by warning of the burning platform. You know, we're on a burning platform, it's going to collapse, we need to move now, or we're all going to die. And it feeds the fear. And in my experience, when people have fear, they tend to resist change versus embrace change. And then the other response is to shrink time horizons and just focus on reacting to whatever's going on at the moment. And that creates mounting pressure and spreads people way too thinly because there's so much going on, you can't possibly respond to everything. So my counter to this is we have to help people move beyond fear and connect with each other in ways that leverage impact. And in that context, I've become a proponent of what I call zoom out, zoom in, which is forcing ourselves to look ahead and frame a really inspiring, credible opportunity that could motivate people to take action and to move forward, and then zoom in and focus on some short-term actions that can start to demonstrate real impact in addressing that opportunity. So you build the confidence that actually that opportunity is credible and worth pursuing. And then the other advice to leaders, and this is very countercultural in today's environment, is to frame powerful questions. My belief is the leaders in this rapidly changing world that are going to have the most impact and success are those that really focus on framing questions. And first of all, it communicates to the people that actually asking questions is okay. It's not only okay, it's good. And I think that that in most cultures that we have today, institutional cultures, asking questions is a sign of weakness. No, asking questions is key if you're in a rapidly changing world. And then it also helps to express vulnerability on the part of the leader to say, you know, I don't know, and asking for help. Can you help find an answer to this really important question? And I think that helps to build trust with the people, and it helps people to learn faster together because now they're excited and inspired by a question and working together to try to find an answer. So anyway, I'll stop there, but I think those are some of the things that can be helpful.
Great. Thanks, John. And Amy, from your perspective, how do you answer this question?
Well, first I'd like to say I very much endorse what John said about fear, because we live in a very disruptive era, and that can become an overworked term, but it is disruptive, and not just in terms of technology, but in terms of geopolitics, in terms of people's fears around their health and the pandemic, in terms of the economy, changing relationships between states. So I think it can be very difficult, though that increases the need to take some time. It can feel that you have to make decisions very quickly in a state of fear, when actually being able to take a moment to work with others and think through which future direction you would like to take becomes increasingly important. At the same time, it becomes harder to do because our natural instinct in a disrupted environment is to move quickly and make decisions. I'd also note that I come into this from the social science and humanities side. So two areas that I've been looking at in terms of decision-making lately that I think are quite valuable. UNESCO has been working on a concept called futures literacy. And I think while that has been primarily focused on bringing futures and foresight capacity and resilience to students, and making futures as much a part of the curriculum as numeracy and traditional literacy, I think that corporate leaders could productively stand back and perhaps take the idea that futures literacy is a skill. It's not a one-off. It's something that needs to be embedded through the whole organization, and a futures mindset is something that can be of value to every person within the organization or the community. So I think futures literacy is one very exciting area that could be adapted for organizations. And I also think, probably the historian in me, that while they could be quite outsized and controversial figures, there's some wisdom with some of the mid-20th century figures in the beginning of foresight as a profession. And I'm thinking specifically of Herman Kahn with the Hudson Institute and Fred Polak, who wrote The Image of the Future and was a very influential sociologist who spoke a lot about how a coherent and cohesive, inclusive vision of the future is what distinguishes social success from failure. So I think, again, futures literacy, I think, could be a very valuable avenue to explore. And I also think going back and thinking about some of the initial wisdom of those mid-20th century figures could actually be quite helpful to us, even though our focus is on the future from here.
Thank you, Amy. Yeah, really, I really like this idea of looking at fear as kind of this underlying, very important topic to address. I mean, I know a friend of mine who's a neuroscientist from Stanford, Andrew Huberman, who I've met before, talked to him a lot about fear. And one of the things he says is fear is anxiety plus uncertainty, right? So we might have situations in life where we're uncertain, but it can be very exciting, right? Like a surprise party, right? Or something. And then there's other situations where there's anxiety, but we're certain about something, like we're going to have to get up on stage and perform, right? And there can be anxiety, but we have certainty still. And so that fear is there when we have both the uncertainty and the anxiety, which I think a lot of people maybe felt this past year, especially in the leadership space. I'm curious to hear how can thinking about the future help them, I guess, understand or mitigate or deal with their fear? Amy, do you have some insights on that?
Again, I think taking that pause even though it can seem like that's the absolute last thing you have the time or the luxury to do. And to bring in voices that might not ordinarily be around the decision-making table can help too, using particular foresight tools, and there's a variety of them depending on the situation you're in. But I think the basic bedrock idea of inclusivity, diversity, and taking time brings you back to, I mentioned Fred Polak earlier, and his two essential insights in a very long book, but the two essential insights that many futurists refer to as the Polak game now, is you ask a group of people, first of all, are you optimistic or pessimistic about the future? And then you ask them, do you feel that you have individual agency to affect the future? Or do you feel that ultimately what happens in the larger world is really beyond most people's ability to affect? And by opening up that discussion about attitude and agency, you begin to surface people's fears. And you also begin to surface their resilience and where they may be able then to participate. So, okay, well, you know what? We are facing a lot of challenges. But I feel that we collectively have agency. And I feel that if we consider these signals, we consider these trends, we consider these disruptions, we may not be able to affect the whole world, but we can find a way to be adaptive through these processes of change. We don't have to just be vulnerable and constantly be in reactive mode. We can begin to shape our future, which of course is what, I mean, foresight was never, though that's a misnomer, of course, foresight was never about predicting a future. It's about shaping and deciding upon collectively a preferred future for that group, organization, or community. So again, I think coming back to some of the essential wisdom of the mid-20th century, those concepts of agency and attitude can be quite important all along the decision-making chain in helping to address the fear that we must take action immediately because things are so chaotic.
All right, John, any follow-up thoughts on that?
Wow, it's a rich topic for sure. I think that certainly I've become more and more focused on the emotion of fear as something that is shaping our choices and actions or lack of action. It's actually the focus of my new book, The Journey Beyond Fear, which will be coming out in a few months. But I think Amy's absolutely right. The key questions to ask is, in your view of the future, are you focused more on threat or opportunity? You know, is your view of the future about the world's going to come to an end, or there are amazing opportunities that have never been addressed before? And then the question of agency. Do you feel that you have the ability to shape that future and go for the opportunities? And I think, again, unfortunately, in our world today, many leaders are feeding the fear. They just want people to act. And so they feel if they're going to die, they'll act. Well, frankly, they don't. They tend to hide and resist. And so I think that the opportunity is for leaders to really shift the focus of the future to what could we accomplish? What amazing, if we came together, what amazing things could we accomplish? And to, again, to Amy's point, shape the future, not view it as a given, but it's something that we can shape.
Yeah, I like to think that if you're not kind of shaping the future, then someone's shaping it for you. Right, in some ways, and then you have to live into that future that's been shaped for you, right? In a sense, Amy, from your perspective, you know, with this taking—I would like the idea of taking space because that has lots of different meanings to it. Can you expand more on that too, and also how that relates to futures literacy?
Well, I think that taking space is connected to something we were speaking of earlier, which again has to do with fear and disruption. Because while these are very necessary discussions to be having, in addition to the technological, the political, economic, health-related, all of the uncertainty in this COVID-19 world that we're living in, we add to that without going into so-called cancel culture. But I think we can all acknowledge, regardless of how we feel about this particular moment, that there are very important discussions that we need to have to bring out that there's not one monolithic view. So you take all that uncertainty, and I think people, even well-meaning people, can often feel reluctant to have robust discussions precisely because we know that we're walking through a minefield right now. And there are many, many people who are asserting, many groups, many individuals who are asserting themselves and saying, I have a perspective, I have a take on this. So to bring that back to the question of space, again, we're back to sort of a dilemma where in order to shape the future and address it without fear, you have to have robust discussions, and leaders play a crucial role, whether they're corporate, organizational, activists, whatever, whoever the leader is. Leaders play a crucial role in creating an environment where people feel empowered to speak. But those discussions aren't always going to be easy. That's another thing that quickly comes through, even in groups that might have seemed homogenous. Whenever I've used the attitude and agency game to begin as an ice-breaking exercise, there can be extraordinary diversity in the room. And you start to say, okay, where are individuals coming from? Why do they feel this way? How do they see themselves able to shape the future? And why is that some people might be more optimistic and others pessimistic? So again, it's a bit of a long answer to your question, but I think what you're getting at is quite crucial. We have to create spaces where everyone feels empowered to speak. And we have to do that in an environment of rapid social change, where we know that many of those discussions are going to be quite fraught for historical reasons. So I think it comes down in many respects to organizational leaders to create that space where the discussion and the dialogue are facilitated. They are, so to speak, safe spaces, but not to try to shut down reasonable and well thought out conflict too early. Because that's another thing that fear will do. Oh, let's stand back. This is getting a bit too heated. This is getting a bit too conflictual. But the questions that are on the table for our futures are, they're very intense. And they're happening at a moment of so much, again, not just political and economic, but social change. So that space or facilitated, safe, but robust dialogue is, I think, something that needs to be thought about prior to launching a futures or foresight exercise.
And follow up on that, John?
Yeah, I was just going to add, I think this triggers a discussion around, again, something that's in the agenda of most leaders, which is, in a rapidly changing world, we need to learn faster forever. Mm-hmm. Lifelong learning. But when I probe leaders on what they mean by lifelong learning, they mean training programs. We're going to get our people go to listen to somebody and memorize what they say and learn a skill or something that wasn't, you know, they didn't have before. My belief is, in a rapidly changing world, the most powerful and necessary form of learning is not in a training room in the form of just sharing existing knowledge. I don't want to dismiss it. Yes, there's some value in that. But the real power and impact comes from learning in the form of creating new knowledge that was never had before. And that is through action together with others. And again, it builds on this notion of creating spaces. I've done a lot of research in the work environment and found that the small groups that accelerated performance most rapidly were those who engaged in what I've come to call productive friction. They are constantly challenging each other, constantly, but they're doing it with respect. It's not to put each other down, which again, in most of our environments today, most of our cultures today, if you challenge someone, it's with the purpose of putting them down and advancing your own agenda. No, these people are challenging each other because they share a commitment to have more impact in a world that's rapidly changing. And they recognize that the only way they're going to do that is by bringing diverse people together and creating an environment where they can, in fact, challenge each other. So.
And I'm curious, both of you, and starting with John, like, how do we, you know, how do we actually create those spaces? Because I think, as you talked about earlier, you know, it's a challenge for leaders to actually frame the questions, because people don't want to hear, like, the question being asked, right? The questions that need to be asked they just want someone to come up with a solution that makes everybody feel comfortable, even if it's not the right solution, you know, it seems like. So how, what's some tangible things? Is there any, steps or practices or tools or just?
Yeah. Before I get to the steps, I mean, one observation is I believe we are going to have to make a profound transition in our institutional models from what I describe. All our large institutions today are driven by a model of scalable efficiency. It's just become more efficient, do things faster and cheaper at scale. That's the key to success. In this rapidly changing world, the institutional models that are going to be the most successful are those that are focused on scalable learning, where the goal is to help everyone learn faster. And again, it's learning in the form of creating new knowledge, not just sitting there listening to teachers. And so I think that it's challenging because it goes to the heart of the cultures that we've created in our institutions. And I think it starts with the leaders. I mean, the example that I mentioned earlier about asking powerful questions. I mean, that's hard, that's challenging, but it's a very specific thing that any leader could do. And it doesn't have to be, asking 1,000 questions, just frame one really inspiring question and send it out. But in my experience, that has really powerful impact in terms of indicating to the people that there's something changing here. And then I think it's the focus on a mantra that I call small moves, smartly made, can set big things in motion. And it's really focusing people on small moves that they can make quickly, that they can learn from and get even more insight from, but that will give them confidence that they can in fact drive change and keep reflecting on and learning from those small moves in terms of what's really going to be required to be successful.
Thanks, John. And Amy, any follow-up thoughts on that?
I think some of the interesting work that's coming out that is not just theoretical, but is quite applied and real life, real world, if you will, is in the area of anticipatory governance, which again can be adapted from the public sector to the private sector. And if you look at small countries like Finland, Singapore, New Zealand, they're doing extraordinary work with their actual on-the-ground foresight programs in this concept of anticipation. And that links to what John was saying about ongoing organizational learning. There is nothing that will make a group of people cynical, in my experience, faster than running even the most beautiful foresight exercise with bells and whistles and the four color reports that come out afterwards, and it all looks great and it goes in a drawer and nothing happens. Anticipatory governance, which again can be brought into the corporate sector, you have to institutionalize the learning. And you have to have an iterative process. These aren't one-off exercises. Well, here's what we learned about COVID, and now let's put that in a drawer. We're quite probably, as one example, moving into an era of pandemics. And so what we've learned from that, what worked, what didn't, what was effective, what was less so, these need to be brought into the light. And that needs to build into the next round of learning so that it's not just a series of, again, one-off projects, but you build anticipation and futures literacy into the organization. And again, you keep the process going and you make the connections across issues that might initially seem quite disparate, but actually all have to do with this question of rapid change and how we can effectively adapt to it.
John, any follow-up thoughts from there?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think that the in my experience, the key here is a question of balance. On the one hand, it's increasingly, although it's challenging because we are in a rapidly changing world, it's having a long-term view of what is a big opportunity that we can go after to focus people and inspire people and excite them. But then the balance comes by at the same time, I go to a lot of scenario planning, scenario development workshops, and they map out really imaginative alternative futures. They might even decide what's the most probable one. And then the meeting's over, to Amy's point, and it goes in the drawer. And now let's get back to work. Versus, again, in the zoom out, zoom in approach that I've become a proponent of, the meeting's not over until we've agreed, given whatever future we think is the most likely and most inspiring and, you know, that we could shape, what are the actions that we can take in the next 6 to 12 months, 2 or 3 actions, no more, that we're going to commit to and devote a critical mass of resource to and learn from in the next 6 to 12 months. But it now starts to focus people on action and impact and learning, which again is missing, I think, in most of our corporate cultures.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think that there's that disconnect a lot from the actual, you know, the practice of doing the foresight scenarios, anticipation, and then having a pathway into action, right? In informing strategy, informing decision-making. A lot of companies don't have that in place for some reason. And that's also hurt the foresight profession on some levels too. I'd like to, you know, wrap up here, running near the end of time, and like just give you both an opportunity to share some of your final thoughts from this discussion. And I'd like to start with Amy.
Thank you so much for letting me be a part of this, because I think this is such an essential topic and an essential discussion for all of us to keep having. In terms of last thoughts, I suppose I'll just draw upon an anecdote from my own experience as a facilitator and trend analyst with a particular client. In this case, it was the maritime sector. And that is a very old, established, you know, sector with a lot of traditions and very set ways of doing things. But they know that with autonomous shipping, robotics, and the like, that they're facing a great deal of disruption. So with that as background, long story short, I did my horizon scan, my trend analysis, and was getting respectful responses, but they were very reserved. The CEO, this always impressed me, I've never forgotten it, but the CEO, who was clearly very, very powerful within the organization, stopped and said very politely, "I'm not sure I quite get the blockchain thing. Can you explain that again?" Now, the reason that stuck with me is once the leader said that and exhibited a bit of what we might call vulnerability, suddenly the discussion among everyone sparked. And my point, again, comes back to creating that space and the way that effective leaders really do have a role in that. And they may feel that they're accessible, they may be accessible, they may feel that they encourage their coworkers. But again, people have a great deal of reluctance, many of them, to put themselves forward in an uncertain situation. So using that as an anecdote, I guess final thoughts would be leaders do play just such a crucial role. And sometimes in asking the questions, as John points out, or showing that they don't know everything, or opening up a space for people to show that perhaps it's okay not to be the expert in that discussion, but you can still contribute. I think that's an extremely important insight that I've seen play out again and again and again. It was particularly memorable there, but I began to notice that in every effective situation that I've been facilitating, that the leader creates a climate in which people can be vulnerable.
Thanks, Amy. And John?
Oh, wow. Yeah, it's final thoughts. I guess I'll just pull back to, done a lot of research on the long-term forces that are reshaping the global economy, and I've come to describe it as the big shift. I believe we're still in the early stages of a profound transformation of our global economy and society, but it's been going on actually for decades, but still very early stage. And the paradox for me of this big shift is, on the one side, it is creating mounting performance pressure on all of us. We're getting intensifying competition, accelerating pace of change, extreme disruptive events, huge pressure. At the same time, it is creating exponentially expanding opportunities. We can create far more value with far less resource, far more quickly than was ever imaginable in the past. And I think the challenge and opportunity for leaders is to help move beyond the mounting performance pressure, which again, we have a natural tendency just to focus on the pressure of the moment, to really see and pursue the opportunities and build a culture that will help to accelerate our movement towards these opportunities. And I think that's very exciting.
Great, thanks, John. All right, so final question. This is the most difficult one of the day. What is one word that you would like to leave leaders so they can be more future intelligent? Amy, what's one word you'd like to leave?
Dialogue.
Dialogue. And John?
Similar, I'd say openness.
Openness. Great. Yeah. Well, thank you, Amy and John, for your time, your insights, and your wisdom. I really appreciate you on the podcast today.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us today on the Flowcast. To get a summary of today's dialogue, find out more about today's guests, listen to previous episodes, or discover more about Haku Global's neuroscience-based Futures Intelligent Leadership programs or customized strategic foresight and innovation sprints, visit us at www.haku.global. At Haku Global, we believe it is time for more futures intelligent leadership. The future is something we need to think more intelligently and feel more deeply about so we can collaborate to discover today's solutions for future problems. If you are in a leadership role and need support or training to scale futures intelligence across your organization, then contact us at Haku Global. This is your host, Tyler Mongan, and until next time, have a preferred and conscious future. Aloha. Thank you.